Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune's with us once again for our parenting slot afternoon.
Afternoon, Joanna. Sean.
First question is, my five-year-old daughter is an only child. Since she was about 3 and a half, she's had an imaginary friend. She goes through different phases and different friends. Sometimes she would have animal friends similar to her soft toys. Recently, she had an imaginary friend called Molly, who she says to be a girl who is the same age as her. She tells us all about what Molly likes and doesn't like. Sometimes when I watch her doing imaginative games with Molly, it all looks like fun. However, I still worry as to whether it is normal and healthy. All the advice seems to suggest that imaginary friends are good for children, but I worry that it is because she's an only child and has no brothers and sisters, and she's so involved with her imaginary pal. We do make sure that she has regular play dates and is involved in activities with lots of children, but maybe it's not enough. I had a very big family, so I always feel guilty she doesn't. The other day I was busy when she asked to play with me and she said she would play with Molly instead. I felt guilty about that too. She's a very happy and pleasant little girl and interacts with other kids very well. I just wonder if this over-reliance on Molly is normal or should it be a worry?
No, I'm not convinced it is an over-reliance.
No, I just haven't read that. Is it the parent really who,
yeah,
you know?
But that's, I think, you know, and it's all there when, you know, this parent is feeling guilty. And I think when we feel guilt as parents, we tend to knit a narrative very quickly that stems from our guilt rather than from the child in front of us. Oh, it's because she doesn't have siblings. And just to kind of nip that in the bud for this parent, there is research about imaginary friends and all of this. And the research does show no correlation or causal link, neither, between loneliness and having an imaginary friend. It's a very old belief, actually, that was around in the 1990s, that only children are lonely children. That's what they have to create friends because they don't have siblings. And there was no research basis for it, but it took on a kind of strength of word of mouth. But there really isn't any causal link with it. In fact, what the research shows is that children who have the capacity to create and sustain an imaginary friend like this tend to have advanced social skills, stronger verbal skills, higher levels of creativity and problem solving. So she's right, you know, this parent is right, rather, when they say, you know, it's, all the stuff I read tells me that this is okay. It really is okay. And more than that, there are a lot of pro-social benefits to it. I will say imaginary friends generally tend to fade away around 9. I think that's quite sad, actually, even saying it.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, you know, in that movie Inside Out when Bing Bong fades away and I find that heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are this lovely sign of a lively, creative mind. I would, you know, you don't need to encourage it or discourage it. Just leave her with it. She's doing perfectly fine. I actually think it's amazing when she's asked her parent to play with her and the parent is busy. She's like, that's okay, I'll play with Molly.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is great resourcing this little kid has. What I would say, and we are seeing this in general, anecdotally, certainly, I don't know if there's research around this, but as screen time increases in children's lives, we are hearing less about imaginary friends.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, isn't it? Especially in this age group. And also, I think because of screen time, I don't want to say screens mean no imaginary friends, but what it means is children have less opportunity to be bored. And I'm a big fan of boredom for all of us, but especially for children, because out of boredom will come desire and creativity and ideas and innovation and imagination.
Yeah.
And letting your mind wander and that kind of daytime reverie, that free-floating state of mind that boredom can allow us, we're all losing touch with that. So I do think, you know, leave her with her imaginary friend. Molly sounds like a delight. She's not using Molly as a scapegoat for bad behavior or Molly did it, not me, as she's holding the red crayon in her hand. She's simply creating a way of having a playmate to play with. And she's using her imagination in very rich ways for a five-year-old child, to be honest with you. So I'd encourage her to have other creative interests as well. Like she's a creative little thinker.
Yeah, because there is a line about what Molly likes and doesn't like. And so is it, can it be at times a way for the child to express themselves?
Absolutely.
Molly likes.
Well, Molly's created by this child. Yeah. So Molly is an extension of this child. So there will be traits, even idealized traits, that maybe Molly can do things this child wishes she could do.
Yeah.
Stand up to people or advocate something or be great at soccer or, you know, whatever it might be.
Eat broccoli.
Exactly. Or not eat the broccoli, you know. Me and Molly, we're aligned.
Yeah, no, you Molly lives in chocolate. It's fine.
Yeah, but so absolutely there's going to be aspects of herself in Molly.
Yeah. And there's nothing, being an only child,
no,
there's not like some tremendous downside to that.
There really isn't. And this comes up so often in my work as well. Mm. And it's always a parent tortured with guilt about, oh my goodness, is this a problem? There is no research, that peer-reviewed, published research, that would back up that there is anything about a child suffering by virtue of being a single child. What you do tend to see is, and parents of single children will know this, is that you end up doing quite a lot more because you're going to be, without a Molly, you are the playmate.
Yes.
You know, you're the one doing the things and you're the one heavily. So there's a lot of things that siblings might do with each other that you as a parent will end up doing with your child. But there's no correlation with a child having no siblings and having weaker social skills. There's nothing, no evidence for that.
Yeah. My wife has always suffered on and off from depression. The world often gets worse when our children were born, a boy and a girl age 8 and 5. But in recent years, she's been coping well. We have supported extended family on both sides and she works part time. She has been on medication for the past 5 years and this seemed to have helped her, and she's been the full-time carer of the children in the home. However, recently she's been struggling again. She's still attending talk therapy and her psychiatrist is reviewing her meds. I'm worried the children are now picking up on the depression and how it affects her mood and energy, and it may be indirectly or directly impacting them. We have never really spoken to them about their mum's depression, but recently the eldest child asked me why her mother becomes so quiet and doesn't talk. And I wasn't sure what to say, but I'm aware that this is ongoing. We will need to address and discuss it at some stage. And we must do that in a timely and age-appropriate way and use all the correct language. I want to continue to be as supportive as possible to my wife, but can't help being conscious how that might affect the children. Any help, much appreciated. Mm,
I'm sorry that she's unwell, you know. Yeah. But it does sound like there's the absolute right resourcing and support team involved in your lives. I think, you know, your children are 8 and 5. They know there's a knowing, not knowing with kids.
Yes.
And, you know, they know it's something. They just don't know what it is. And the risk with not talking to children about things like this is children tend to personalize then. Did I do something wrong? Did I make mommy sad? Because it's a bid to understand it and master, well, what's going on with this? And they're noticing she's not their usual mommy. That's not the way she's behaving. And I think there is a couple of ways of approaching this. There's a nice way of talking to children, if you can say that there's a nice way to talk about depression, but there is, in terms of using what's called the rain cloud analogy. I don't know if you've heard of this, where you talk to the child around sadness is like being caught out in a quick rain shower. Mm. Okay, it's not a nice feeling in the moment, but the sun will come out, you'll dry off and you will be okay. That's sadness. But depression is when there's a big, dark, grey rain cloud and it hangs over somebody's head and just won't go away. And even when the sun comes out, that grey rain cloud stays over that person's head. Mm. So you want to differentiate sadness from depression, because sadness is a normal emotion.
Yes.
That your children are also going to experience. And in certain situations, it's exactly how you're supposed to feel. And I think it gives children a visual, tangible way to, okay, so this is like being stuck in a grey rain cloud that just won't go away, even when other people feel the sun isn't touching you. Mm. And that can be a nice way to do it. You're really thinking in your head, this is an illness. And it's an illness where somebody feels kind of flat and they have a numb feeling, or they feel that dark grey rain cloud of sadness and feel very tired. They've all of those types of feelings. So they spend a lot of time in bed, or they're not able to do the fun things or laugh with us and do certain things. It takes a long time to lift this feeling, and it can make it really hard for grown-ups to play. It can make it really hard to have energy to do things that we know she loves doing with you. But she has a special doctor who knows how to work with this, and she's working on getting better, and we'll take care of her until she feels better. There are some books that I like. Now, as a parent, these are 8 and 5 year olds, so please read these yourselves. It's just beautiful in general, the way it's illustrated, but it's by Levi Pinfold and it's called The Black Dog. And
that's what Churchill called depression.
Yeah. And actually, I heard PJ Gallagher talking about depression recently, and he also mentioned The Black Dog. But it's talked about in a way that it's centered around a family called the Hope family. Mrs. Hope, Mr. Hope, all the little hope. And it's the little hope, the littlest hope in the family. They're all afraid of the black dog and they close the doors to work hard to keep the black dog out. But little Hope goes out and opens a tiny flap and brings the dog in. And the dog gets, you know, from a huge big presence to something that's much tamer, much more domesticated, sitting on the rug in front of the fire when they work with the black dog and welcome it in as part of their family. And it can be a nice way to frame a conversation, a book like that. Michael Rosen's book, The Sad Book, is also excellent, but it is literally a book about sadness. So again, these are not books I'd hand to an 8-year-old and say, you read that now and work that out.
Grand.
This is very much a book that you read and you say, okay, is that going to help me to talk to my child about this? And it just informs how you frame the conversation. But being honest, open, but developmentally appropriate, as always, is the way forward. But I would talk to them about it.
If you use words like sad, though, I mean, and even grown-ups can have a difficulty understanding what's it like to be suffering from depression.
So a
child, for, you know, their emotional palate, if you like, if you say it's a bit like sadness, they'll go, well, I know what that's like, but that's...
No, you have to say it's not like sadness.
Yes, yeah.
And you have to really be clear about that sadness is not a good feeling. We've all had it, but after a while of feeling like that normal rain cloud of sadness and the sun comes out, you will feel better. Depression is different. It's a different type of sadness if you do want to bring sadness into it. It's much heavier. It takes longer to go away and it feels like the rain cloud is never going to leave you.
Yeah.
And so you do absolutely have to differentiate between sadness and depression. But you're right. It's something that adults will often struggle with as well. You know, I just feel sad. You don't. Depression is not sadness. It's something much more invasive on your mind, body and life.
Should both parents be present, if possible, for that conversation?
If possible, but mum might not be able to do that right now, in which case the other parent is absolutely well placed to do this. And then as mum is feeling better, of course, mum needs to know the children know and what's been said. And it can become something they talk about as mum is better. If mum's up to this conversation, of course, mum should be there. But she may not be.
Yeah, yeah. Maria says, my only child had an imaginary friend till she was 6. She's now a perfectly normal 25-year-old who can't even remember the friend.
I know, that's what happens. Aww. They disappear.
Yeah.
So as a parent, write this down. Remember it.
Remember it. Here is the most explosive question of the day. My son is in 6th class and has had his confirmation this weekend and will be going into first year next year. He has been bugging us for a phone for his confirmation and I don't want him to have one. He's offering to use any money he gets to pay for it, but paying for it is not the issue. It's all the dangers brought with having a phone. I've researched it and it's so hard once to get one to truly monitor what they are seeing. I know open, honest discussion and rules around the phone are what is advised, but I really feel that the longer I can stop him having one, the better. My husband shares my concerns, but at this stage feels we're being unfair or too hard on my son, as all of his pals will get one now and already have them, some since 5th class, one since 4th class. I've offered a compromise of a phone that is not connected to the internet, but as you can imagine, that was not a runner. Am I away with the fairies to think I can get him even to 2nd year without a phone? And will he be ostracised by his classmates? I don't really want to give him a give in just because everyone else has one, but this is causing a lot of tension at home with me and my son, and now with me and my husband, who thinks I'm fighting a losing battle.
Look, first of all, they're not looking for phones, as this question evidences. They're looking for app-enabled, platform-enabled devices.
Yes,
okay,
yeah.
So they're not interested in a clicky button phone to call their friends or type out a text. That's not it.
Yeah.
I mean, the short answer, Sean, is you can delay this as long as you want.
Yes,
like
absolutely.
You absolutely can.
Yeah.
And I'm never convinced that this point of already massive transition is the right time to give kids phones.
Mm.
Because moving from 6th class into first year, ergo primary school into secondary school, is a massive change for children to go through. And now we're going to introduce this device that is a massive thing to introduce into their lives with all the rules, and you're going to check and you're going to keep an eye. I think they're much better to help them transition into school smoothly, and delay giving them the phone until they're settled, at least. I don't see the advantage now. He's certainly not going to socially miss out because he doesn't have a phone in sixth class. Pester power is really powerful, though. It's so effective.
Yeah.
I love that he's offering to pay for it and these ceremonies.
If he's just done the confirmation, he probably can afford it.
He can probably afford it. Yeah. You know, and that's a whole other day's discussion. But I would say to parents as well, while I would urge you not to introduce them at these key points of transition, I would also not be buying devices and saying, Sean, that's your phone. You own that now. Because that really weakens my capacity to regulate that and say, give it to me. Because, well, hang on, it's mine. I bought it with my confirmation money.
Yeah.
It belongs to me. Whereas if you're buying a device and it's a family device, such as a gaming device, something like that, not for Christmas, not for birthdays, not for confirmation days, but you're buying it as a family device, you have much more control over, as a family, who uses it, how it's used, when it's used, and for how long. Similarly with the phone, as parents, we are buying this phone. You get to use it and you show us that you know how to use this responsibly. But the ownership of the device rests with parents. I think when you give it to them as a big gift at a big moment and then you say, now I'm going to take it away when I feel like it, I don't think that's a really nice gift to give somebody.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
it's quite confusing.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, we did do an item about this with Adrian Weckler from the Irish Indo during the week about, are there phones you can get that... No, I mean, obviously the brick. No, you know, the old 50 quid Nokia wouldn't go down well. But one person texted in to say that they have given their a child a Nokia and, you know, they can only phone or text with that. But there's also an iPad or a tablet at home.
Yeah.
And if it's at home, they can control how long they're on it. They can have the parental controls. And
it
that's
can
a kind
be
of
used
a halfway
in a
house.
Family room, you know, where they're not taking it to their bedrooms, but it's used at the kitchen table. And while you're not going to be looking over their shoulder, they know you're in and out and in and out. Absolutely, that's a middle ground balance, isn't it? You know, that if you need the phone and you need to contact me, have this phone. And this is a sort of platform enable device if you need to be in contact or want to be in contact with friends on it.
Yeah.
But you're still doing it within the scaffolding of parental structure and parental rules.
Yeah. Like a lot of them want iPhones that are, and the cheapest one is like 700
it's crazy
and something
money. It's crazy money. No, it really is. And that's a really advanced piece of technology to give to a young child who's never previously owned a device like that.
Mm.
It's like saying, you know, oh, you've just learned to drive. Here's the keys to a Range Rover.
Yeah.
You know, for you to practice getting in and out of gateways with, you know, like it's, we shouldn't be doing that. But also just hold in mind, there's a lot going on, winding up primary school, starting secondary school, big transition coming, a lot of change. Maybe minimize the other changes you're bringing in at this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Joanna, thanks a million. As always, Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.